Chapter 5. Harry had not been this close to his prey, his objective, in over 2 years. The last time he'd found nectar, he had prepared himself for a final confrontation, knowing that was the only kind they would have, and he had gone to her convinced that one of them would die. Like Nectar herself, Harry had eyes and ears everywhere. If she was the queen of the ruins, Harry was its king. And while it could be argued the difference between them was the difference between good and evil, right and wrong, Harry had stopped believing in those dualities long ago, before Raoul's death, before the casual brutality of the world became clear, before even his understanding as a child that they lived in a vanishing landscape. The Hellermans were among the last of their kind in many ways. The family lived in an 18th floor condominium, on a street lined with high-rise apartments just like theirs. By the time Harry and Elliot were 10 years old, they could stand on the balcony and look out over a smoldering city. It was not a coming apocalypse they saw. That had already arrived. Barricades had been erected in the distance, encircling a third of the enclave that had been christened Eastward. Harry hadn't known if it was given this name by the people who lived within its fences and behind its guard stations, or the hundreds of thousands who were kept out. By the time Harry was 13, he knew as much as he could about Eastward and the two slums outside it, the ruins and some place called the Slopes, beyond which a river ran. A river he'd been told was full of dead bodies. The bodies of escapees. The bodies of people desperate to have what his family and their friends had, which to everyone outside of Eastward was everything. "So filthy," his mother once said, referring to the thieves and murderers he'd been told occupied every square inch of land outside Eastward. "They're jealous, Harry. They want what we have, and they're perfectly willing to kill you for it. You and Elliot, all of us. That's why we need control. Without control, it would just be a matter of days, hours even, before they came rushing through the gates to take everything we value and leave our bodies behind. It's terrifying." And it had been terrifying to Harry and his twin. The boys shared stories they made up about protecting their family from the filthy thieving hordes. They used toy guns to mow the killers down, followed by fantasy ceremonies where they were given medals while proclamations were read aloud about their selfless acts of heroism. It made perfect sense then, when Joshua and Elizabeth Hellerman offered their sons to control, to be educated in the ways of the warrior. Grunts, really. Cogs in a heartless machine, expendable, unless they proved to be valuable, which they quickly did. By the time they were 18, having been under the strict indoctrination and training of control for 5 years, they were prized as fighters, and by the time they were 20, they were invaluable assassins. The rarest of the rare. The boys had shared a handler since early in their arrival at the barracks. His name was Axel, and they quickly discerned there was something different about both him and them. Few of the other boys had their own handler, and fewer still were trained privately. "Why are they putting us apart from the others?" Elliot had once asked Harry, when they'd only been with control for 6 months or so. Most of their days were spent with the dozens of boys and young men who were being brought up in the ways of control. But each day there were periods where they were taken aside and taught alone, tutored, as it were, in the ways of death, how to inflict it, and how to avoid it. "They have intentions for us, I assume," Harry said. "I don't think it's a good idea to speculate. We'll know when they want us to know." So it was then, and so it would be. It was through a terse, bland official statement from their handler when they were 15 that Harry and Elliot learned their father had leapt to his death from their balcony after killing their mother. At least that was the official story. Apparently Joshua Hellerman had suffered a psychotic break of some kind. His chosen remedy was a leap over an 18th floor railing after stabbing his wife to death in their kitchen. By then the twins experienced their parents and their parents' deaths as an abstraction. It was something that had happened to people they knew and vaguely remembered, but it was not of consequence. There was no funeral for the Hellermans, no obituary. Suicide was a coward's death, and murder-suicide? It was not to be spoken of, and it never was. Control had bigger plans for them than some sentimental remembrance of people who had given them away, which is how Harry felt about his parents in his innermost emotional regions. Perhaps they had been two mouths to feed too many, or a burden Joshua and Elizabeth could do without, and they had. Once Harry and Elliot left their condominium on the verge of adolescence, they did not speak to their parents again except on holidays and rare visits to the compound that housed the boys' entire lives. Whether by design or desire, they had been severed as cleanly and completely as their umbilical cords moments after their birth. They were alone, together. They were a team of two. They would be inseparable until death decided otherwise, and Harry's life took a sudden and irreversible change of course.